O sadhu, purify your body in the simple way. As the seed is within the banyan tree, and within the seed are the flowers, the fruits, and the shade, so the germ is within the body, and within that germ is the body again. The fire, the air, the water, the earth, the ether, you cannot have these outside of him. O Qazi, O Pandit, consider it well. What is there that is not in the soul? The water-filled pitcher is placed upon water. It has water within and water without. It should not be given a name, lest it call forth the error of dualism. Kabir says, listen to the word, the truth which is your essence. He speaks the word to himself, and he himself is the creator. There is a strange tree which stands without roots and bears fruits without blossoming. It has no branches and no leaves. It is lotus all over. Two birds sing there. One is the guru and the other the disciple. The disciple chooses the manifold fruits of life and tastes them. And the guru beholds him in joy. What Kabir says is hard to understand. The bird is beyond seeking, yet it is most clearly visible. The formless is in the midst of all forms. I sing the glory of forms.
Truth is a challenge, the greatest there is. It is a challenge to inquire. It is a challenge to seek. And it is a challenge to be. It is not something that you will possess someday. It is something that you have to become. And in fact, you can become only that which you are already. You can become only your being. The challenge of truth is the challenge of your own innermost core. The challenge to come home. The challenge to come back to the center. The challenge to recognize yourself. The challenge to know and encounter yourself. It is arduous. To face oneself is arduous. Because we have invested too much in our ignorance. In our self-ignorance, we have staked too much. So self-knowledge begins to become very, very difficult. Hence, everybody is called, but only few listen the call. And those few who listen the call, even many of them misinterpret it, delude themselves. Those who listen rightly, even they don't respond rightly. Those who respond rightly, even they don't persist long. Hence many are called, but very few arrive. In fact, everybody is called. God's challenge is for everybody. It is an open invitation. For that challenge, you are here to accept it, to go through the fire, to be purified through the fire. But it is a gamble. One has to stake one's all. And this is the irony, that when you don't have anything, you are very much afraid to stake. the irony. When you have, you can have courage too to stake. That's my everyday experience. Whenever I see somebody who has something, he is ready to surrender. And whenever I come across a person who has nothing, he is very afraid of surrender. This is very mysterious. One who has nothing is very much afraid to surrender. Maybe he is afraid that if he surrenders, he will come across his nothingness. If he surrenders his defenses, he will have to know his inner emptiness, his poverty. It is better to pretend that one is rich and never look within. It is better to go on dreaming that I have much, so how I can surrender. But this is my experience, and I have not come across a single exception to this. This seems to be the rule, that those who have, they are ready to surrender. They are not afraid. And Jesus says, those who have, they will be given more. And those who don't have, even that which they have will be taken away. When you have the courage to stake. And when you stake, you become capable of getting more. And when you stake all, unconditionally, totally, only then you become capable to receive the gift of God. Then Christ is born in you. When you stake all, Christ is born in you. When you go through the crucifixion, when you are crucified, there is resurrection. I see two types of people in the world. The whole humanity can be divided into two categories. All are crucified, one thing. Half of them remain crucified, and half of them, or few of them, have the possibility to be resurrected. Those who remain crucified, they simply suffer, and they suffer for nothing. Their suffering is meaningless, irrelevant. Have you watched? Your suffering is meaningless, irrelevant. For what you are suffering, what you are gaining out of it, you are simply suffering. You are a wastage, a wasteland. Those who simply suffer are crucified. Those who suffer for God are resurrected. Then their suffering begins to have a meaning, a significance. Life is going to disappear, that much is certain. Death is going to happen, that much is certain. But are you going to die for God? Or you will be simply dying? If you are simply going to die, then you are crucified without resurrection. If you are going to die for God, if you are going to become an offering, a sacrifice, then you will be resurrected. Everybody is crucified, only few get down from the cross, attain a new life, what Jesus calls life of abundance, life of infinity, holy life, because it is whole. Only very few get down from the cross and become ecstatic. Their death is no more a death, it is a beginning of an eternal life. Now it is up to you. If you accept the challenge, you can be resurrected. Christ will be born in you. Or Buddha, or Krishna, these are just names. Remember one thing, Krishna, Buddha, Christ, these are not names of certain persons. They denote a certain state, the same state. Christ means one who has realized oneself. and through that realization has realized the whole. One who has come home, one who can say, I am God. The same is the meaning of Buddha, Arjuna, or Krishna. Ordinarily, you are wandering away from you. And every day you go on going farther and farther away. You go on moving towards the periphery. And you go on creating new peripheries to move again. You move towards the horizon, which is not possible to achieve, because the horizon exists not. It is just illusory. Only the center exists. That's why Kabir says, Sadhu, O monks, go nowhere. God is here. God is where you are. Seek Him not anywhere else, otherwise you will miss. And the challenge is not coming from the outside. The challenge is coming from your innermost core. Even sometimes you may feel it is coming from the outside, because your own innermost core has become almost an outside to you. You have become so unaware of it that when your own soul calls to you, you feel as if somebody else has called you. When the master calls you, it is your own inner voice that he is trying to express to you. It is coming via him. The master is not outside. Just the other day there was a question. Dhruva has asked, when to listen to the master, when to say yes and when to say no. If you have really understood the meaning of the relationship between a disciple and a master, then there is no disciple and no master. Then whenever you say no to your master, you say no to yourself. Then he is you. The question is not to be decided between the master and the disciple. The question has to be decided between your center and your periphery. When you say yes to the disciple and say no to the master, you have said yes to your periphery against your center. When you say yes to the master against the disciple, you have said yes to your center against the periphery. The master and disciple are not separate. We will come in this song. Kabir says, these two birds, the master and the disciple. The disciple has decided to enjoy the world of forms, manifold world of forms, the circumference. And the master sits at the center of the cyclone, and watches. And witnesses, and is happy, even happy that the disciple is roaming around enjoying. One day the disciple will come back. He has to come back, because on the circumference there is no contentment possible. There is no bliss possible. There is only misery and misery and misery, and misery goes on becoming multiplied every day. So the first thing to remember, you are being called. I am a provocation. I am calling you forth. Listen to it. And not only listen, respond. And not only respond, accept the challenge for the journey. The journey is arduous. It is going to be difficult. It is very inconvenient to go into the unknown, because you have to move away from your securities, away from your comforts, away from all that you have belonged up to now, your identities. But only when you move away from yourself, you come to yourself. because that which you think yourself to be right now is not your real nature. It is a deception that you have managed. It is a hallucination. It is an auto-hypnosis. P.D. Ouspensky talks many times about a certain law he calls the law of the seeds. It is of tremendous significance to understand it. Have you ever watched a big oak tree? In its life span, it will create billions and billions of seeds, but all will not become trees. Out of a million seeds, maybe one will become an oak tree. Others will be lost. Nature produces very extravagantly, knowing well that many are called, but many don't listen. Million seeds are produced so that one seed can become an oak. Millions of people are born so that one person can become a Christ or a Buddha or a Krishna. Remember this law of the seeds, even in men. An ordinary man, a normal man will make in his life at least 4,000 to 6,000 ejaculations. Each ejaculation carries millions of life cells. Out of millions of life cells, perhaps one will reach to the woman's egg, the woman will become pregnant. Out of million life cells, perhaps one, you will be surprised, a single male body can populate the whole earth if all the seeds become embodied. A single human body is enough, a single male is enough to populate the whole earth, because each ejaculation carries millions of life cells, and in a whole life 4,000 to 6,000 ejaculations. And that is, I am talking about a normal person. I am not talking about the supernormal or the abnormal. The supernormal has no ejaculations. His energy starts moving into different dimensions. The abnormal is a maniac. Just a few days before, I received a letter from a bride. She wrote, "I am afraid I married a sex maniac. My husband never leaves me alone. He makes love to me all day long. While I am in the shower, while I am cooking breakfast, while I am making the beds, and even while my back is turned to him. Can you tell me what to do?" Signed, exhausted. The name is given, but I will not tell you the name because the husband is here. And there was a postscript, a small note, P.S. Please excuse the jerky handwriting. I am not talking about these jerks. A normal human being can populate the whole world. What about an abnormal human being? He can populate many earths like this. Abnormal human beings become mechanically sexual. They become sex machines. They simply produce life cells and nothing else. They don't produce life. They produce only life cells. A normal person produces life cells and life. A supernormal person transforms his whole life energy into attaining higher peaks of life. Energy starts moving upward. rather than downwards. The energy is no more affected by the gravitation. The energy starts levitating, flying. It has a different plenitude now. But this love, the seeds, has to be understood. So many people are born, only few will attain. And what will happen to other seeds? They simply rot. They simply disappear. Or they are thrown back again into the world as seeds. They are given again an opportunity. Don't miss this opportunity. To be a seed is a great opportunity. Because to be a seed means to be a possibility, a potentiality. You can grow. But then the seed has to understand many things. Because there are 1,001 barriers to be crossed. And 1,001 obstacles to be avoided. And 1,001 wrong alternatives to be dropped. Only then you move towards growth. Growth is a rare phenomenon. It is natural yet rare. When the seed has found its right soil, it grows. It is very natural. Growth is natural. But to find the right soil, that is the very crux of the matter. Kabir, in today's songs, are giving very clear directions. Try to understand them. Sadho, sahjai kaya sodho. O sadhu, purify your body in the simple way. This word sadhu is very beautiful. It has to be understood. It has become associated with wrong meanings. But the word is tremendously significant. The very word sadhu means simple, spontaneous, innocent. The very word means innocent. But if you go and look around India and you go to sadhus, you will not find them innocent at all. They are very complex people. More complex than the ordinary worldly people. From where their complexity has come. They are not spontaneous at all. They are not natural at all. They are doing unnatural things. They are trying somehow to go against nature, to go upstream. They are not moving with the river. They are trying to push the river. Hence they have become unnatural. They are not sadhus. They are not innocent people. The first ingredient in a sadhu will be the understanding that one is ignorant. Ignorance brings innocence. Knowledge makes you corrupted. If you can say honestly, sincerely, that I don't know, you become a sadhu. The first step. Somebody asks you, God exists or not? And you say, I don't know. Your response is that of a sadhu. In Buddhist literature, whenever somebody comes to Buddha and Buddha asks, do you believe in God? Do you believe in hell, heaven? Do you believe in soul? And the man says, I don't know, sir. And Buddha says, sadhu, sadhu. You are innocent. You are greatly innocent. You are tremendously innocent. This is the first step. Knowledge creates complexity. The more you know, the more you become complex, and the more you become cunning. And the more you start trying to deceive and cheat nature. An innocent person remains in cooperation with nature. A man of knowledge starts cheating nature, exploiting nature. He uses his knowledge to force nature to serve him. That's how you see science trying to cheat nature. Of course, in the long run, the nature is going to take revenge. You cannot cheat nature for long. Finally, your cheating is going to be a destructive step against yourself. That's what has happened. 300 years of scientific cheating, and now the whole humanity is coming close to its total death. A global suicide. To become a sadhu, the first thing is don't claim knowledge. Because all knowledge is illusory. You don't know exactly what is the case. Nobody knows. Only ignorant people think they know. The wise people know they don't know. The second thing, the sadhu will be like a child. He will move with his spontaneity. When he will be hungry, he will eat. When he will be sleepy, he will fall asleep. Have you not watched small children? Even sitting on the dining table and they fall asleep. Just they were eating. A bite in the mouth and the child has fallen asleep. The second thing about a sadhu will be his spontaneity. But in the so-called sadhus, you will not find spontaneity. When they are feeling hungry, they are doing a fast. How they can be innocent and how they can be spontaneous. And when they are feeling sleepy, they are keeping a vigilance. They are forcing themselves to remain alert. When they are feeling angry, they are trying to smile. And when they are feeling sexual, they are talking about brahmacharya and celibacy. These people cannot be sadhus. Not according to Kabir, not according to me. The sadhu has to be innocent, like a small child. Yes, Jesus' definition is right when he says, only those who are like small children, they will be able to enter into the kingdom of my God. He is talking about sadhus, like small children. But one difference has to be made. When I say like small children, or when Jesus says like small children, he does not mean childish. He means innocent. Yet mature. Innocence has its own kind of maturity. A ripeness of innocence. When innocence has flowers. What is the difference between a childish person and a person like children? The difference is the childish person has no awareness at all. Yes, he is innocent. When he feels hungry, he feels hungry and he eats. And when he feels sleepy, he sleeps. But his spontaneity has a deep background of unconsciousness. The spontaneity is there, but it is unconscious. When the spontaneity is there and in the background of consciousness, awareness, when the awareness is there and still you don't interfere with the spontaneous. You are so disciplined in your consciousness that you don't create any unnatural discipline for yourself. Your awareness helps you to be natural, to be spontaneous, non-interfering, non-repressive, but yet you are aware. These two things have to be understood. There are people who are unconscious and innocent. They are childish. They will not enter into the kingdom of God. They are not sadhus. Then there are people who are very conscious and have become unnatural because of their consciousness. They have started interfering with their natural life. These people are so-called monks, sadhus. They are also not ready for the kingdom of God. A new combination, a new synthesis is needed. Awareness with spontaneity. That's what Kabir means when he calls Sahaj Samadhi. Sahaj means spontaneity, Samadhi means awareness. Spontaneous awareness. If awareness interferes with your spontaneity, you have missed. If your spontaneity goes against awareness, you have missed. A sadhu is one who is both together. Sahajai kaya sadhu. Says Kabir, O sadhu, purify your body in the simple, natural, spontaneous way. Don't fight with the body. That's the message. The body is yours. The body is you. Don't create any enmity with the body. The Christians, the Hindus, the Mohammedans, the Jainas, they all have been fighting with the body. Somehow, a very wrong notion has become very much prevalent, that the body is the obstacle towards God. It is not so. Not at all. The body has nothing to do with it. The body is a vehicle. If you want to use the vehicle to go to hell, it will take you to hell. If you want to go to heaven, it will take you to heaven. The vehicle is simply available wherever you want to go. If you want to go outside, it will take you outside. If you want to go inwards, it will take you inwards. The vehicle is just a vehicle. It is tremendously beautiful, tremendously cooperative. The body is so cooperative that even when you start destroying the body, it cooperates. You can take a whip and whip yourself, and your hand will be cooperating. Look at the tremendous cooperation. You can whip your body with your own hands. You can drink poison with your own hands and with your own mouth, and the body will cooperate. Its cooperation is unconditional. Such a beautiful body. Such a friendly body. And you have been taught to be against it. And you have been taught that the body is evil. Or the body belongs to the devil. Don't listen to the body. You are embodied in it. You are rooted in it. It is your soil. You have to grow out of it. You have to be nourished by it. The first thing Kabir says, O sadhu, purify your body in the simple way. Don't fight with it. Cooperate with it. Befriend it. And be spontaneous with it. Fulfill bodily needs, because the body is a chariot and you can make it go to God. It will become your passage. It will take you. You can ride on it. It has been given to you for a particular goal. It is a very valuable mechanism. Science has not yet been able to create anything comparable to body. And I don't think they will ever be able to create anything comparable to body. Body is God's most beautiful mechanism. As the seed is within the banyan tree, and within the seed are the flowers, the fruits and the sage, so the germ is within the body, and within that germ is the body again. Kabir says, the life spark is hidden in your body. The germ that can become a flowering, the seed that can become God, the potentiality is hidden in the body. Don't fight with it, because that potentiality is very fragile. If you fight with the body, you will destroy that potentiality. That potentiality is very delicate. If you become aggressive, masochistic, if you start torturing yourself, that delicacy will disappear. The body has to be looked after. One has to be very caring about the body and very loving about the body. And then it's very spontaneous, you see, spontaneity purifies it, makes it holy. The fire, the air, the water, the earth and the ether, you cannot have these outside of him. And Kabir says, this body is not outside God. It is in God. Nothing is outside of him. The air, the earth, the ether, the fire, the water, nothing is outside of him. Because nothing is outside him, God has no outside. Now, let me explain it to you in this way. The rock has no inside. The man has outside, inside both. The rock has only the outside. God has no outside, he has only the inside. These are the three stages of growth. Matter, only the outside, no inside. There is no soul in it, no consciousness in it. Man is both outside, inside, because he is body, soul, both. Matter, mind, both. God has no outside. He is simply consciousness, simply soul. Nothing is outside God. So he cannot have any outer circumference. The matter has no center. God has no circumference. Man has both. That is the agony of man and the ecstasy too. Man is tremendous because he bridges the matter and mind. He bridges the world and God. With one hand he holds matter, with another hand he holds God. He is the bridge. Look at the beauty of your humanity, the glory. And that is its anguish too, because man is always pulled apart, torn apart. On one side the matter pulls it, on another side the call of God. On one side the material possessions, on another side love, prayer, meditation. On one side ambition, money, respect, on another side silence, beauty, good. And man is torn apart. This is one stage. The another stage is you feel so fulfilled because you are both. In you is the meeting point of God with the world. Man is a crossroads where God and the world meet. Let me tell you, without you the world will be very empty. Without God the world cannot be. Without matter also the world cannot be. Without man the world can be, but it will be very impoverished. Let me repeat. Without God there is no possibility of the world. And without matter too the world cannot exist. Without man the world can exist and God can exist, but both will be impoverished. Without man the agony will disappear and the ecstasy too. God will not be able to dance and sing. And matter will not be able to reach to peaks and touch the feet of God. Without man, the bridge will be broken. man is the greatest glory, the most subtle bridge, the most impossible possibility. It should not happen. It is against all rules that man is. God is simple. Matter is simple. God is pure consciousness. Matter is pure unconsciousness. Man is complex. He is consciousness, unconsciousness, both. He is polar. Opposites meet in him and contradictions meet in him. Remember this. It is up to you to turn it into an agony. That is your attitude. It is up to you to turn it into an ecstasy. That too is your attitude. Agony is ecstasy looked in a wrong way. Ecstasy is agony looked in the right way. And the poison becomes honey if your vision becomes right. O Qazi, O Pandit, consider it well. What is there that is not in the soul? And Kabir says, what is there that is not in the soul? Don't talk about the Vedas, O Pandit, and don't talk about the Quran, O Qazi. And don't talk about the Bible and the Dhammapada. What is there that is not in the soul itself? All the Vedas are contained there. Because all the Vedas have come out of the soul, flown out of the soul. The source is there within you. All the Gitas and the Bibles are born out of you. Because Christ entered into his soul, the Bible flowers. Because Moses entered into his soul, the Bible flowers. Because Krishna entered into his innermost core of being, came out the beautiful Bhagavad Gita, the celestial song. Because Buddha penetrated his own soul, Dhammapada was born. All is in your soul. When you seek in the Vedas and the Quran, you seek in a wrong direction. And you are seeking a second-hand God. And God can never be second-hand. God has to be first-hand. When you are seeking in the scriptures, you are seeking theories and not truth. And truth is original, has to be original. The truth has to be born in you. It cannot be borrowed. O Qazi, O Pandit, consider it well. What is there that is not in the soul? Everything is within him, within God, within soul. And he is in everything. The water-filled pitcher is placed upon water. It has water within and without. It would not be given a name, lest it call forth the error of dualism. The whole problem has arisen out of language. Within and without, God and the world, matter and mind. The whole problem has arisen out of naming things. Don't name. Drop language. Be in a non-linguistic gap and suddenly you see there is only one. Try sometimes a non-verbal approach. That's what meditation is all about. Looking at life without verbalization. Sit by the side of a tree and just look the tree. Don't even call it that it is a tree. Don't say it, what kind of tree? Khajurina? Pine? Siddhar? Don't call it any name. Drop the names. Sometimes look into somebody's eyes and don't call any names, man, woman, yours, friend, enemy, young, old, beautiful, ugly, don't bring names in. Just look into the eyes. Try to avoid verbalization. And suddenly you will come to a leap, a quantum leap, where you will be surprised to see that the observer has become the observed. That the observed has become the observer. Then you don't know who is I and who is thou. These are the moments from where God enters you. His first footsteps are heard. At least for 1 hour, drop out of language. And to drop out of language is to drop out of society. To drop out of language is to drop out of religions. To drop out of language is to drop out of all that is man created. Have you watched it? Language is very, very significant. Animals are silent. Trees are silent. They don't argue. They don't have any scriptures. A tree is neither a Christian, nor a Hindu, nor a Mohammedan. It is simply there in its beauty with no name. It does not know even its own name. Those names are given by human beings. Your society is created through language. Your knowledge is created through language. Just think, if suddenly a miracle happens and language disappears from the world, what will be the difference between a man and an animal? What will be the difference between you and the tree? What will be the difference between a Hindu and a Mohammedan? There will be no difference. All distinctions are language created. So make it a small discipline. When I say discipline, I say with great fear. Because discipline, and you can misunderstand it. When I say discipline, I don't mean force it upon yourself. The word discipline means learning. When I say discipline yourself, I mean learn. Sit by the side of the tree, look at the rose, and don't utter words out or in. Just be present. Let the rose open in your presence, and let your presence sour on the rose. Let there be a meeting with no language. As the rose is silent, so you be. As the rose is not saying anything about you, so please, don't say anything about the rose. The rose is not saying how beautiful a man you are. The rose is not saying you are a man or a woman, black or white. The rose is not saying anything. The rose is in tremendous silence, pulsating in silence. So pulsate you. Sit by the side, look into the rose, just watch. Don't let language arise. If words come, put them aside. Just remain indifferent to words. They will come. They are your old habits. They will not so easily leave you. You have been so much using them, so much exploiting them. You have been so much dependent on them that they will not leave you so easily. They will hover around. They will buzz around. They will bug you. They will come and they will say, beautiful rose. You remain indifferent. You don't cooperate. I'm not saying you start fighting. You simply don't cooperate. That will do. Fighting never helps. The moment you fight, you are getting into the mess, confusion. If you fight with a word, you will need another word to fight, remember. You cannot fight with a word without words. A word comes and you say, I am not supposed to have any words.
Bhagavan has said, sit silently. These are all words. Or you say, I am meditating, don't you know? Don't come to me. But this meditation is a word again. You can fight only with words. To fight with words, you will need more words. And you will get into the whole rut again. No, no need. Let the words pass. Let them fill out. It's okay. You be indifferent. You be neutral. And they will buzz around for a few days. Then by and by they will feel they are neglected. By and by they will feel you are no more interested. By and by they will feel that they are not welcome. And when words start feeling they are not welcome, when thoughts start feeling they are not welcome, they start disappearing. You are no more a host to them. And one day suddenly you will be surprised. Few moments have passed. Rose has been there. The sun has been there. The green trees have been there. You have been there. And not a single word has crossed. You have tasted for the first time what meditation is. You have tasted Tao. You had a glimpse into the being of Kabir and Krishna and Christ. You have tasted Bhagwan. You have come to see something for the first time of tremendous import. And once tasted, you will welcome it more and more. Wherever you will find time, you will sit silently. And there is no need to go to a rose bush. You can sit silent in your room. The walls are as beautiful. It is said about Bodhidharma, for 9 years he sat facing the wall, doing nothing. Just facing the wall. Sometimes sit facing the wall, just looking at the wall, plain white wall, nothing to distract, nothing much to say. Anywhere you can create the interval, the gap. When two thoughts have a gap between them, in that gap, take a jump, dive in. Language is society, language is civilization, language is communism, language is Islam, language is Hinduism, language is Christianity. And in the gap is Christ, in the gap is Muhammad. And in the gap arises Quran. It is said, when Muhammad for the first time heard, of course it is a parable, he heard that a messenger from God is standing and telling him to recite the name of God, recite His glory. The word Quran means recite. That's from where the word Quran has come. Because the first thing that Muhammad heard was recite. And he was very much puzzled. And he said, how to recite? I don't know. And the angel said, that's why, recite. Because those who know, they cannot recite. And Muhammad said, I am very illiterate and I don't know even language rightly. I cannot write and I cannot read. And the angel said, precisely. That's why I say recite, because those who know and can read and can write, they are lost in their knowledge. You are pure in this moment. Recite. In this purity, God has spoken. In this purity, His own innermost soul has spoken. In this very purity, the beautiful Quran was born. Now, you need not go to Quran. You can go to your inner interval and again the messenger will come and say, recite. I say it so to you because it has happened to me. It can happen to you. Whenever there is interval, God's messenger are around you. When there is tremendous silence, God is within you. You are fulfilled. It should not be given a name, lest it call for the error of dualism. The moment you give name to something, you have created the world as dual. You have brought a dualism. You have brought a subtle schizophrenia in the world. Whenever you say this is beautiful, you have brought ugliness into the world. Don't you see it? Whenever you say I love, you have brought hatred into the world. Whenever you say you are my friend, you have brought enmity into the world. Whenever you say this is good, right, moral, you have brought immorality into the world. You have brought devil into the world. In deep silence, when you don't know what is good and what is bad, and you don't utter any labels and names, in that silence, the duality disappears, the schizophrenia disappears, the split disappears, the world becomes one. That oneness is God, and to live in that oneness is to be a sadhu, is to be a sannyasin. Kabir says, listen to the word, the truth, which is your essence. When you are listening to your concepts, labels, names, language, you cannot listen to the ultimate word. You cannot listen to the logos. Kabir calls it sabad, the word. It exactly means the same as the Bible says, in the beginning was the word. It was not human, because it was in the beginning. Humanity came long afterwards. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. Kabir uses the word sabad. Sabad means the Word, the Logos. That which was before man was ever there, and that which will be again there when man has disappeared. It has nothing to do with our words. It is not linguistic. It is not part of language. It is Omkar. It is Om. It is the soundless sound of existence. It is what Zen masters call the sound of one hand clapping, unstruck, not by the class of two. When you clap hands, it is a struck sound, a created sound, and it is out of conflict. It is out of two. No, there is a sound of clapping one hand. Not out of conflict, but out of such ultimate harmony, out of one. That is the word, the sabat, the truth. But you have to drop your language before God can speak His language. You have to be utterly silent before He can convey His message. But we have a very wrong notion. We think if we have to pray, we have to talk to God. No, prayer is more listening than talking. Better listen rather than talk. You cannot improve upon God. Whatsoever you say is meaningless. Whatsoever you say is ridiculous. He knows it already, so what is the point? You keep quiet. You remain in silence. Rather, you try to hear. Be sensitive. Don't use the tongue, use the ear. Prayer is more concerned with the ear than with the tongue. The prayer that comes out of the tongue is foolish, meaningless. You are advising God. You are saying, do this way. Whatever you are doing is going wrong. You say, my wife is ill. Make her well again. And I am getting old. Give me more strength and a longer life. And so on and so forth. All your prayers are your advices to God how things should be. A really prayerful man cannot advise God. He will say, thy will be done. Thy kingdom come. Whatsoever you are doing must be right. Maybe I cannot see why it is right. I cannot see even that it is right. That is my ignorance. But don't listen to me. Even if in my ignorance sometimes I say something to you, please never listen to me. You go on doing whatsoever you are doing. Real prayer is not a talk. It is a listening, a deep listening. One simply sits silently, open, sensitive, alert. Have you watched sometimes waiting for your beloved, your lover, your friend? A slight murmur in the trees, the wind passing by, our old leaves of the almond falling, and you rush out. Maybe she has come, maybe he has come, and it is nothing, just wind playing with old dead leaves. You go again. Again you wait. Again something else. The postman moving in the neighborhood. Footsteps. You are again on the door. Just as you watch for your lover, for your beloved, for small indications, you remain alert. The same way a prayerful mind remains alert for God, for His word to arrive. And it arrives. The moment comes when Quran arises in you. The moment comes when you start feeling the reality of the Vedas and the Gita. And when you have felt it at your innermost core, then scriptures are beautiful. Then you can read. Then read as many scriptures as you can. It is fun. Because then all the scriptures become real. You know. You become a witness to them. Vice versa is not true. You can go on reading the scriptures. Just by reading the scriptures, you will not arrive to truth. But you have arrived. If you have arrived, then all scriptures become true. Truth is first. Scriptures are shadows, echoes. Kabir says, listen to the word, the truth, which is your essence. He speaks the word to himself. And he himself is the creator. And there are not two persons. When God speaks, he speaks to himself. There is no other. You be so silent that only God is, then he speaks to you. But then he is speaking to himself. It is a monologue. There is no other. He talks to himself. He whispers to himself. That is possible only when you have completely effaced yourself. If you exist as the other, he cannot whisper. Or he may go on whispering, you will not be able to hear. As the other, you are blocked. As the other, you are deaf. Drop the otherness. That is the meaning of surrender. Just the other day somebody had asked, what is the meaning of surrender? This is the meaning of surrender. Drop your otherness. Don't think yourself as the other. Put aside your separateness. Don't say I am. Let him be. And let him be so totally that you are drowned in the totality, absorbed, lost. Be a wave in the ocean, but don't claim that you are separate from the ocean. That is the meaning of surrender. There is a strange tree which stands without roots and bears fruits without blossoming. It has no branches and no leaves. It is a lotus all over. Now Kabir says, God is the original cause. Of course, he cannot have any other cause to him. God is the creator, and you cannot ask who has created him. He is the uncaused cause. There is a strange tree. This God, this existence is a strange tree which stands without roots. Try to understand it. It is simple. The whole cannot be rooted in anything else because it is the whole. Nothing exists outside it. The whole is rooted in itself. Now this will be a very strange tree, rooted in itself. The tree has to be rooted in the earth. How the tree can be rooted in itself? But the whole has to be rooted in itself. There is nothing else. There can be no cause to God. God is the ultimate cause. That's what we mean by God, the ultimate cause, the uncaused one, which has always been, which will always be. There is none before it and none after it. God has no past and no future. God has only the present. God is eternal. It is a strange tree, says Kabir, which stands without roots and bears fruits without blossoming. It is very illogical, he says. Existence is illogical. Or there is a logic to its illogic. It is very strange, mysterious. It is not reducible to human syllogisms. It blossoms and bears fruits without blossoming. It has no branches and no leaves. It is a lotus all over. How it is possible? Lotus all over. It is only lotus and lotus and lotus. No roots, no leaves, no branches. It is simply ultimate flowering. God is the ultimate, that which has already happened. There is nothing more to happen to it. God is not a seed. The seed is something which is not yet a flower. Something has to happen to the seed. God is that which has already happened. There is nothing more to happen to it. That is the meaning when we say God is perfect. There is no more growing. It has grown. It has always been in that state, the state of perfection. It is lotus all over. Two birds sing there. One is the guru and the other the disciple. Now God has divided himself in many forms and goes on playing the game, the leela. Somewhere he is the man and somewhere he is the woman. And they lure each other. And they sing songs of love. And they dance dances of love. Somewhere he is the guru and the disciple. The same polarity. Somewhere he is the matter and somewhere he is the mind. And somewhere he is the sound and somewhere he is the soundlessness. and somewhere he has become life and somewhere he has become death. But the same polarity. The disciple and the guru means the yin-yang, the male-female. The disciple chooses the manifold fruits of life, and both are within you. The master is your innermost core, the witness, and the disciple is your periphery, your world, the sansar. The disciple chooses the manifold fruits of life and tastes them, and the guru beholds him in joy. And the master inside you, the center inside you, beholds you in joy in all your games. Have you watched it? Sometimes sift yourself to the standpoint of the master and see yourself playing. How many games you play? The game of love, the game of ambition, the game of anger, hatred, all our games, all our games. But if you become too much absorbed, you have become the disciple. If you become alert, you have become the master. This is the only change, the only transmutation that is needed, the only alchemy. Watch. Kabir is not saying stop the games. He is saying just you watch from the master's standpoint too. Sometimes simply become the watcher, the witness, and see the disciple playing the games. You are talking to your woman and saying beautiful, sweet nothings. Watch. Enjoy from the master's side. For a moment, sift your whole consciousness to the witnessing and see how beautiful game you are playing. If you can sift from the master to the disciple, from the disciple to the master, you will be never caught in any game. Then the game will remain the game. You can play it as much as you want, to your heart's desire. But you will never be caught. You will never become identified. You will always remain free. Free in the world, jivan mukta. Free in life. Dreaming and yet not dreaming. The game that you are playing with me of being a disciple, watch it. And sometimes let your center become the master. Let the game be introverted. It is an extroverted game. I am the master and you are the disciple. We are playing a game. I am just trying you to train so that you can one day introvert the whole game. It is easier to play on an extroverted stage, projected stage. It is easy. I am the master and you are the disciple, so there is not much confusion. Things are simple. You have one role, I have another role. One day, you have to sift it inside. You have to close the eyes and let your center be Bhagwan, your master, and your periphery, the disciple. And then play the game, the same game. And there will be tremendous energy released. A great understanding will dawn over you. The morning, the sun has risen. You will see your own game. And remember, don't be tempted to stop it. There is no hurry. If you are tempted to stop it, again, you become identified with the master. Identification has to be dropped. One has to be free to move from the master to the disciple, from the disciple to the master. This is freedom, this is liberation, to move in the polarity. This is very easy to get identified with the disciple. You are the disciple. Then there are masters who are identified with the master. Both are in the same rut, in the same boat. Both are in a deep illusion. The real master is one who is not identified with either, who knows both are my being, both are my polarities. And the master sits at the center and the disciple goes on playing. And the master does not even interfere. He does not say, don't do this. It is a game. In a game, everything is allowed. Yes, sometimes cheating too. In a game, everything is allowed. The game is a game. One is not sincere, serious about it. It is a game. But the witness remains. And then by and by, the game continues. And yet, on a deeper layer, it has stopped. The game continues on the surface. The waves go on playing on the surface. And the ocean is totally silent at the center. This is the state of being a Christ or a Buddha. Hare Krishna. That's what Krishna is trying to say to Arjuna, his disciples. That don't be worried about the game, play. If it has come to your part to play the game of a warrior and fight this war, fight. Just remain at the center and go on watching that this is a game. And nothing is to be serious about it. You will be surprised that Krishna is the only great master in the world who is known to have cheated. And Hindus call him the most perfect master. He is. Rama is not that much perfect. He is very afraid of cheating. He is too sincere. Sincerity is his bondage. He is not relaxed. He is a perfect saint. He has denied all that is wrong. But that is seriousness, and that shows that you are still taking the game very, very seriously. You are not taking it as a game. Krishna is totally different. It is a game. He promises one day and forgets another day. He is really liberated. His liberation is perfect, without flaw. His liberation is without flaw because he knows all is game. When all is game and all is a dream, then why be bothered? He is not worried and bothered. He plays it and remains unattached. Kabir is again a perfect master. He never left the world. He remained in the world. He remained a householder. He had a wife and children. And he continued to do his work. He was a weaver, a poor man. He continued to weave. He continued to sell his clothes in the market. He lived a very ordinary life. He had thousands of disciples. And they will come and they will say, Master, why you go on doing these things? You simply sit. You simply meditate. You simply rest. We are here. Why you should do? But he will say, no. Whatsoever game God has given to me, I have to play. And it is good. And I enjoy it. I will miss it very much if I stop. I will miss my customers in the market. They wait for me. I weep for them. And God comes through them to purchase it. No, they will miss me very much. And who will weep such beautiful clothes for them? Nobody can do it as beautifully as I can do it. And the whole day he will weep. And by the evening he will go into the market, as in India weavers go to the market to sell their clothes, whatsoever they have manufactured. And to each customer he will say, Ram. So God, you have come. you were waiting, for you have made really a beautiful peace. And it is going to last. And I have not only weaved it, I have put my whole heart in it. Take care of it. It has been made through love. He continued. He remained ordinary, and yet with tremendous extraordinary awareness. The Master is within you, your center, and the periphery is your disciple. When your center has arisen, then the outer Master is just a reflection. Then you are grateful to the outer Master because he has pointed to the inner. The disciple chooses the manifold fruits of life and tastes them, and Guru beholds him in joy. What Kabir says is hard to understand. The bird is beyond seeking, yet it is most clearly visible. The center is beyond seeking, you cannot seek it, because it is already there. It cannot be sought. It has to be just discovered. It is already there. A beautiful anecdote Prem Bodhi has sent to me. A joke by Dick Gregory, the black American comedian. You white fox must be really crazy. Like when you came to America, you claimed you discovered a country that was not only being occupied at the time by someone else, by the American Indians, but actually being used by them. And you say you discovered it, you must be crazy. It is like me and my lady meet you and your lady as you come down the street on a beautiful brand new Cadillac. And my lady would say, "Wow, what a beautiful car. I wish it was mine." And I would say, "Martha, let us discover it." Just the American way, let us discover it. The inner bird, the eternal bird, is there. You have to discover it in the American way. It has never been lost. It is already occupied. And you are already using it. You may not know it. You are already using it. You are centered in it. Without it, you will fall into pieces. It is holding you. So you have to discover it in the American way. Martha, let us discover it. It is beyond seeking. Because in fact, it is the seeker. How the seeker can be sought? And it is the sought. It is the journey and it is the goal. It is the beginning and it is the end. It is the disciple and it is the master. The bird is beyond seeking, yet it is most clearly visible. The formless is in the midst of all forms. I sing the glory of forms. And Kabir says, I sing the glory of the forms, because I cannot sing the glory of the formless. You cannot sing the glory of God. That is not possible. It is difficult to reduce him to a song. It is difficult to reduce him to words. So Kabir says, okay, it is impossible to sing the glory of God. I will sing the glory of the manifold forms. I will sing the glory of the rose flower. I will sing the glory of the human eye. I will sing the glory of the river in the night. I will sing the glory of the white cloud. I will sing the glory of the sun and the stars. So let us sing the glory of the manifold forms, and that will be an indirect praise to God. God cannot be praised directly. one has to be very indirect. You can offer to God your praises through a rose flower, through a beautiful rock, through a beautiful woman, man. You have to sing the glory of existence. And that is the only way to worship God. Don't go to the mosque, and don't go to the temple, and don't go to the Gurdwara. Sing the glory of this beautiful cosmos around you. Sing the glory of the new leaf on the tree, and sing the glory of the new dewdrop on the grass. Sing the glory of the stars and the sky. Sing the glory of human love. Create poetry. Create sculpture. Create songs. Be creative, because that is the only way to offer yourself into the feet of the Creator. Says Kabir, only when you are creative, you are close to the Creator. Enough for today.